that was a great ride, man. And to look back on it, that was a great feat. Like I said, to finish up at Mosaic, to close that door, you know, was awesome. And as years go on, I guess I'll probably be remembered a little bit more for that. But it was a positive note.
Alongside Davis Sanchez, my name is James Cebulski. Welcome to another edition of The Waggle, where it's the off-season that just keeps on giving, Chezzy. I mean, it feels like each week there's something dramatic that happens in the Canadian Football League. You know, we had this fun, wild roller coaster ride of a season in 2016, and the good times just keep on coming, whether it's a coach getting fired, a general manager getting fired, a major signing from a name player who used to play in the NFL. You've got draft talk and combine stuff, all sorts of free agent signings, and now we've even got a commissioner.
Content for the Waggle, James, does not necessarily mean good times. It means people are losing their jobs, and our content does not necessarily mean good times. But yeah, it's been. Especially the last few weeks, it has been hectic times, and definitely some a surprise. And you know, it seems like a good man has lost his job, and he'll be moving on to something else, which I'm sure he'll have great success in. And now the league is in a situation where we got to find the next.
Okay, well, we'll get into this here momentarily. I guess in one breath, no publicity is bad publicity, they say, although I think there's a few instances where I just don't think you'd ever want to be talked about in a certain realm. And you know, I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of this old saying. There was a political magazine long before, like, websites like Deadspin and Gawker. There was this Canadian political magazine called Frank Magazine. It was like just a total industry, like media dirt sheet, and for politicals as well. And it basically kind of lift the curtain as to like who was hooking up with who on Parliament Hill, and like a little scandals, and who was dating who in the media industry. And this is going back into the 90s, long before, like, just to the early advent of the internet. And, you know, it's since kind of gone by the wayside. But the old slogan was, great read until you're in it, right? which I guess sometimes you could say about the Waggle, right? Hey, we're talking about you this week, and if you're not a guest, chances are it may not necessarily be good, unless you're having a baller of a season. But right now, it's been the off season for the last few months, so if we're talking about you, at least we're talking about you. But it isn't always a good time. Davis Sanchez, who you can find on social media.
I'm Davis Sanchez. I'm Sanchez Davis. Number two, Sanchez Davis 2 on most of social media, is the Facebook and on Twitter. I'm Davis Sanchez and all that good stuff. Cebulski?
At James Cebulski on Twitter and at James_Cebulski on Instagram. And you can track me down on Facebook, as many of you loyal listeners have reached out over the last year.
And a couple loyal listeners have talked to me, sent important messages about your ties and the fact that they don't like them. Saying people, there's really only one message I got, but I just thought it was kind of funny. And I think your tie game is tight, James.
Well, I was going to say, I would agree with that comment too. I think I look pretty good with my tie selection as well. So that it would only translate to those individuals being A, colorblind, or B, having a horrible sense of fashion.
Yeah, let's get
you there. Know?
You know, why don't you send whoever that was, because I won't even give you a platform right now, but whoever you are, send back the message with a picture of your tie game, and if it's legit, then we can talk.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the props from the fashion game from you, because you're a stylish mofo, and I can honestly, I think, and you get props like when we're on the road with the Waggle. I find that generally there are at least a handful of players on every team that come up to you at some point and go, man, or there's some sort of sound effect with followed by props, right? It's like, you know.
Well, thank you, James. I definitely work at it and try my best to not let you down.
You work at it by spending money.
Let the people down and a shop.
We can just hint at it, and we'll show the pictures, but we got fitted for some new suits last week.
We did.
Indochino, shout out to you guys here in Vancouver. Chez picked out a new suit.
Good folks over there,
and I went with a double-breasted, loud, it's expressive. It'll be a fun one. It's not one that you can surprise, wear all the time.
Surprise, Sobolski. You're wearing something expressive.
That's it. That's right. A little expressive. Speaking of expressive, we should try to get into our thoughts here, as a lot of people are wondering what went down with the commissioner. And look, I think when you look at what's been written and what's been said over the better part of the last few days since this announcement really caught everybody off guard, the prevailing sense from a lot of experts and observers seemed to be that he just, you know, there were a few too many speed bumps that he seemed to hit and stumble over. There were comments that he said he just, from a disciplinary standpoint, I think people thought he missed the mark on different occasions. He just didn't necessarily seem as in tune to the league as he should have been for the commissioner of the Canadian Football League. And you know what? I think in some areas, they're probably right, some of these critics, in the sense that where he missed the mark. And I just want to point out that the Board of Governors went out and searched and interviewed, and that's the guy they chose. That's the guy they thought that could be their guy to take them into the future. And you know what? Commissioner Orge did a nice job with, from a digital standpoint, and an area that the Canadian Football League needed to get better. Look at the CFL's digital content and look at their digital platform over the last couple of years. Next level. There's a lot of really, really good employees at the Canadian Football League that they've invested in, they've spent money in, and it's reflective of it, of the quality that you see, whether it's on CFL.ca or across the platforms. That has gotten significantly better.
Rewind 5 years ago and take a look at the website and compared to today.
Night and day.
Sure, and a lot of things.
Night and day.
And you know what? The digital platforms and the social media things, this is actually one of the biggest, when people, the detractors right now, these are the things that they're complaining about, that this was what Jeffrey Orge kept talking about, and what about the game, and let's focus on the game. Well, that's fine. I agree to a point, but let's also give credit to, because if the game was great, which it is, people will be complaining about how behind we were, like with social media and all the digital platforms and these things. But so let's give credit to those things that they have improved, and that was his strength, something that he put his hat on, that he wanted to improve, and he went there. He also, with the rule changes, I thought were great as well. That's been a big difference. So I mean, the detractors right now, that's where they're going with this, and that he didn't know enough about the game. He didn't know. And another thing that is kind of pissing me off, to be honest, is everyone who keeps talking about this, you have to be a CFL fan. Like Jeffrey Orge wasn't a big enough CFL fan growing up, that he said in his press conference he grew up watching Warren Moon, and it wasn't really true. They thought that he didn't really spend his childhood watching as much CFL as he may have led us to believe.
Yeah.
Who gives a crap, okay? It doesn't matter. He's here to help the league, to be the head of the league. Now, if he happens to...
Was Gary Bettman the biggest hockey fan
sure,
growing
like,
up?
How was Gary Bettman snapper? And I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But I mean, yes, okay, if a guy happened to be a lifetime CFL guy who grew up and knew the history of the league, I think that's a huge attribute, and I think it helps you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on. And I also expect the guy that once he does come in, if he didn't know anything about the CFL before he came here, he better spend the time to learn the history of the league and talk to people about it and get caught up on it. I respect that. Mm-hmm. I don't care if he didn't grow up learning it, as long as he wants to learn about it and digs into the history and talks to people about the history of our league.
Yes, and I think there is a cultural adjustment if you're not used to following and being a fan of the CFL. And you can speak to this because you played in the league for a dozen years. But it's a different animal in a lot of ways, and especially when you get into some of the different markets. And I think it's a completely different animal than the NFL, where you might have different walks of life and you might have different cultures and different cities and different markets, but the CFL, I think, is a beast unto itself, where how people might approach it in a major urban center compared to a big city in the prairies. When we look at Regina, for example, you know, Winnipeg, I don't want to necessarily, you know, Winnipeg to me, I sometimes look at almost a little more of an urban center more and more these days. I don't think it's as much of a prairie city as we talk about, but I think there's certain things you have to recognize and understand the balance of what things might be like in Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver, and what things are like in, say, Calgary and Edmonton and Regina and Winnipeg.
And I think that's time, and that's putting the effort into to being there on the ground, talking to people, learning about it, you know, spending the time, you know, talking to the average Joe, sitting in the stands, like they say Mark Gohan used to do all the time,
yeah.
where they didn't see enough of the commish, Jeffrey Orange. I mean, and if someone's willing to do those
I've
type
never
of
seen
things,
him at a regular season game in Vancouver, several, though, in the crowd. And several, I remember we times. Just remarked, like, why is he sitting with that person, though?
but
he did. Like, I remember seeing him in the stands at different points. And
I mean,
and again, it was only 2 years. And in fairness, it was less than two seasons that he really had to kind of to get going. And this is another issue that the Board of Governors is having an issue with. Since 2000, they're about to hire their eighth commissioner, or their eighth individual that has sat in the commissioner's office since 2000, Davis. Since 2000.
Wow.
Now, two of those are interim commissioners with David Brayley back in the early 2000s, and most recently, Jim Lawson, who was kind of the caretaker in between Cohan and Jeffrey right. Orridge. But eight guys they're going to hire.
Over 30 years is 11 commissioners over 30 years. And in the other end, in the National Football League, over the same amount of time, Roselle, Tagliabue, and Goodell.
In the entire history of the NFL.
Right, three guys in over the last 30, we've had 11, and like you say, eight since 2000. So
that's over 50 years for the NFL with Roselle and Tagliabue. Gary Bettman's almost a quarter of a century in the NHL. Look at Major League Baseball, to your point as well. Bud Selig. And you know Rob Manfred in the last 20 years, and in the NBA the last 30 plus years, you've got David Stern and Adam Silver.
This is a
continuity.
Yeah, sure, we have. I mean, the Board of Governors is compiled of some successful and powerful people who all have different ideas and the way they go about things. And now you have one person who has to try to really please all these different people working in different markets with different agendas. No wonder it's not an easy task, and I think people understand that, and that's why it's a tough hire. That Jim Lawson, who will head it now and can go through trying to find the next commish, but it's not an easy job, and I hope the league takes their time and try to find the right person. And for me, I commend Mr. Orridge on doing whatever he felt was right in the time that he sat in that chair, and with what is not an easy task for anybody.
It's obviously a thankless job when you look at some of the individuals that they've gone with, and they've looked in these realms and these departments before in the last few years, and maybe it's time to go in a different direction. They tried it with Tom Wright back in the mid 2000s, and I'm a big Tom Wright fan, but obviously, there was a disconnect between the league's Board of Governors and Tom. And Tom wasn't there all that long. And, you look at, Cohan was there the longest in that span for 7 years. And, it's funny. I think in a lot of ways, I don't think it was anything spectacular that he did. I think he benefited from stability with a lot of teams. And the Argos kind of had stable ownership at the time where he was captain of the ship, which certainly makes things a lot easier, by and large anyway. But, that's the one guy. But, you look at the longevity. He obviously knew how to play politics with the Board of Governors. So now becomes the next guy. I have one name in mind that I think that if the CFL could afford him, could pony up to him, I think he'd be a perfect choice to hire for the commissioner of the CFL. I can't remember if I've told you this or not over the last week or so.
I don't know if you have.
You ready for this?
I'm extremely...
Okay. Some people are going to say, what? Some people are going to go, Cebulski, get off this podcast. Ready? Brian Burke, wow. Who's right now with the Calgary Flames. Brian Burke, I think, would be a great choice to be commissioner of the CFL.
Why does Brian Burke
He
fit
checks
for you?
So many boxes because, A, he's got league front office. He's got yep. league experience having worked in the NHL's front office years back. He's been an executive. He's run, pro sports teams in the past as well. He's a lawyer as well. So there's another, sure. checking the box if you want to have somebody that's at the top of the food chain. So in that, he's got the qualifications from a political standpoint. He's worked in Toronto. He's worked in Vancouver. He's worked in Calgary. He's lived in Canada for several years. To me, I think Brian understands the psyche of how I think fans and individuals are wired, you know, in the heartland of the country and the prairies. But I think Brian's also savvy enough. And it's not, and I don't mean to say savvy enough in terms of undermining what people in the heartland are, and what they do and what they're all about, but in terms of going into corporate boardrooms in corporate Canada, whether where all those head offices are in Toronto, and whether he can go out here to a city like Vancouver and work those rooms with executives where Brian commands a presence.
He does.
And Brian does also still, you know, is important about the integrity in terms of the physicality. Brian brings together that sort of corporate clientele, but he also brings a little bit of that blue collar lunch bucket, roll up your sleeves. You know, I'm okay to see a little blood on the collar and a little dirt on your shoes.
I like him standing up in front and being a figurehead of this league. I think it fits as well.
Yeah, and listen, when he talks, people listen.
He's a no BS guy. No BS guy. But also has the business acumen to go along with that.
There's so many, and whether or not the league can afford to hire a guy like that, whether he'd be interested.
I'll take a pay cut.
But Brian Burke, to me, I think would make sense on so many levels. You know, to recognize how to handle things. And yes, I get that he's not a quote-unquote football guy.
That was my next question. But so what if that's the argument for all the people I hear talking this week? It's a lot of people are going that direction of, okay, well, we've tried these business guys. We've tried the marketing guy or the digital guy, these guys with the business background or the social media background or advertising backgrounds. Now it's time to get a football guy, someone who's been around football all their life. So what's your argument to that? I have some strong feelings about that. What's your feeling about that and that argument? And that's where everyone seems to be going now, because you always go to the opposite.
Adam Silver's not a basketball guy. David Stern's not a basketball guy.
Gary Bettman was a heck of a player back in the day.
No, you don't need to be a football player. And I know a lot of hockey people
coach to be a yeah. To be a,
and I
a
and I agree.
I think it's ridiculous.
A lot of people don't like Gary Bettman if you're a hockey fan and you're listening to this as well. But let's not forget, like, give Gary Bettman credit. It's been 25 years, and the league generates revenues north of $4 billion annually, where the league was, I don't even know if they generated $1 billion a year as a league back when he took office in the early 1990s. The league has grown exponentially under his watch. The league's expanded. I know there's things we can complain about as fans, but Gary Bettman, the league is better off over the last quarter century with Gary Bettman having overseen the growth of the National Hockey League to where it's now a 30-team league and soon to be 31 with Las Vegas expanding. So I don't think you have to be a insert sport here guy
I would agree that it helps. I would agree that
it doesn't hurt.
The fact that you understand the landscape of the Canadian Football League, which is different than the other four major sports, because we have our own niche clientele, and we have it's a special league that has its own special attributes. And I think if you know that and you know what makes our league special, and you've been around the game, I think that helps. So I think right away you're talking about checking boxes. If you can check that box, I think that puts you at least ahead of the game. If everything else is somewhat equal, I'll take that guy all day long, a guy that's been around the league and knows the game. But if that's the only box
you check... Is this a subtle way of throwing your name in the hat?
Not a chance. But if that's the only box that you check,
yeah,
and the rest you don't have a lot in, I'm going to say what's going to happen is, okay, great, this guy knows the game, but now what happens with everything else that goes along with being a commissioner of a major league, and I don't know how that works.
So he's a football guy. Does he have business sense? Right. No, but he's a football guy, right. Davis. Yeah, but does he understand, like, in terms of negotiating the next television contract? Yeah, but he's a football guy. Yeah, but does he understand?
He can shake hands in the stadium.
And he's fun at parties.
He's fun at parties. He can shake hands in the stadium before games and make the average fan feel welcome, and that's great. I think that's important. And there's a job for that, too. It's called, like, Directory of Community Relations, or it's called, like, Public Affairs or something of that interest, not the commissioner, because we're talking, like you say, that TSN, that Bell Media deal, any other type of big major deals, you need someone who has the history of that. But I guess
you got a guy or a woman for that matter.
You know, I don't have anyone that checks all the boxes off the top. I joked last week about Matthew Prue, in Montreal, because we go back to the guy who's been around football his whole life, who's a lawyer.
Modern guy, too.
He's well, very well respected. He's a lawyer. He has a law history. He's a lawyer.
Wow.
He works in the CFL media, working for RDS as the host of their football show.
Former guest of the Waggle.
Yeah, former guest of the Waggle. I mean, obviously, a teammate of mine. He's respected. And anyone you talk to, he's respected by them. He like I say, he has a law background. He knows the ins and outs of the league. Well spoken, articulate guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's somebody I think people. Dwayne Ford. I think is obviously Definitely. A guy that has to have his name in there. Same thing, a guy that's well-respected. Anyone you talk to, he's well-respected.
Dwayne may not be a lawyer, but in terms of understanding the league and what he has done and helped develop Canadian talent, yeah. I feel like every 2 weeks we kind of wave the Dwayne Ford flag on the show, but in this case, CFL, legitimately.
Dwayne is at any, you know, anywhere you go with CFL talk, Dwayne is going to be there because he demands respect, and he's also a selfless guy who, if he doesn't know, Dwayne's not the kind of guy who's not afraid. He's afraid to ask the questions he needs to ask. So if he needs to hire someone to do this part of it, Dwayne's a guy who is confident enough in himself that he would go ask those questions and you know, get the answers and get the help he needs to get. So when you go to football, guys,
I mean, more and more that I think about it, that's a really good idea.
He's a sharp young guy, and I think.
And progressive in terms of having a young voice, where totally. you look at the trend, Adam Silver coming in recent years, Rob Manfred. I mean, Matt's obviously younger than both those guys.
And we're putting,
but it's interesting and outside the box.
And I want to throw some out. Matt's a friend of mine, and he's, you know, I play one championship with the guy. He's a friend of mine, so I'm not just throwing his name out there just as a buddy pass here. He doesn't even know I would throw his name out there. He probably wouldn't even like it. But my point is, when we're talking about all the boxes to check, if everyone wants a football guy, but you have to have, you know, you have to know that, be on the have your finger on the pulse of the league, which a guy that's been in the media for the last 5 years has that. If you want a guy that's articulate,
connected
well
to players,
spoken,
a guy who can speak to young, players as well and managers,
has the law degree, all those things, and well respected,
and a TV background, understand broadcast deals and marketing as well. So.
He's just one of the guys, but there's others as well. I think, you know, Suter's name has come up, Glenn Suter from TSN. He was on with Taddy and Marsh on TSN 1150 there in Hamilton, and he made some good points about wanting a football guy. That goes back to our discussion of what kind of guy you want. And always when people deem the lack of success, you always go to the opposite. And, you know, here you go right now down to the American politics. Barack Obama, people feel like there was somewhat of a failure in some of the things. Some people feel like that with the economy and the terrorist attacks and these type of things. So what do? You go polar opposite. And I feel like that's kind of similar. I don't want to make that comparison.
But
people are going to look for the opposite. Instead of going for a business guy now, everyone's pounding the chest of, let's get a football guy.
And so it's finding somebody who can inspire, I guess, the football guy vote, right, so to speak,
if
right?
If you don't know football, you can't run a league, or you can't be the head of a league unless you know the game, and you got to be knee-deep in the game. And Dwayne's...
What about pinball?
I think pinball would be good as well. But
pinball from a shake hands, you know what? And my question about pinball is, I wonder from the business standpoint, but from an inclusiveness, from being the guy to go into the crowds and work the room and work, you know, and engage 25,000 people in any stadium.
Nobody's better than pinball.
But it's, you know, does that translate in the boardrooms and the broadcast deals and that sort of signing off on a six, seven-figure sponsorship deal that –
Which
you know.
Has kept the league, and that's really what has kept the league alive. I just as much as everyone else, want somebody who is going to take the time to go and sit on a bar stool and shake the hand of the average Joe. That's why this league is successful, because of these fans, the great fans we have. In the same breath, though, you need a guy who can, like you say, strike these deals and deal with the corporate world as well. Yep. But I want to go back to the Glenn Suter interview, because I found it interesting where he went with it. And at first, it sounded like everything he described of who he thought the next commissioner would be was him to a T. It was someone that had been in football their whole life, someone who was in Canada, someone who played the game, someone who's been in the locker room was a quote, someone who has been around the last several years in either media or coaching or something like that. So he checked every box. And at first I listened, I said, that sounds crazy. Someone that doesn't have a history of, you know, in the business world, you know, so-called business world, to jump in and be a commissioner of a league. It sounds ludicrous. And the longer he talked and explained and you know, how it would go down, I became a believer towards the end. And I actually think that someone like Dwayne or Glenn would be guys who could be fits, because if, as long as you're willing to know what you don't know, because one of the things that Glenn talked about was it doesn't take a, you know, he kind of underplayed, which I think there need to be a little check on that in that box. That would, I'd be curious to find out that, but he kind of underplayed the fact of the social media stuff and the digital platforms. And he said, it's simple. That's just Twitter. Well, I'm going to disagree with that, because that's not the case. He was kind of underplaying what the commish did in the last, or just the whole CFL department has done in the last, you know, 5 years with the whole digital platform thing. And he said, it's just getting the league on Twitter. It's not a big deal. I'm going to disagree with that part of it.
Yeah.
But as long as, you know, you're willing to put the right people in the right place to do that for you, and you know how important that is moving into the next gen, to the younger generation,
yep,
then I think it's okay. And I think that Glenn Johnson is another name that goes in the same list of guys who have been around the league. He's actually been in the league office and is in the league office. And his name is at the top of a lot of people's lists as well, for a guy that's been a lifetime CFL guy who knows the league and knows the ins and outs of the league office working next to the commissioner the last couple of years.
A lot of credibility in terms of, and you know what, from a crime and punishment standpoint, in terms of league safety and just in terms of developing the game, I mean, Glenn makes a lot of sense on so many levels. If it's your choice, are they a football guy or football girl for that matter?
Sure, yeah, we can't. I don't think at this point, James, I can't give a straight answer to if it has to be a football guy.
Yeah, I guess it depends on who it is,
sure,
right?
Sure, I think I'll say this. I think it helps if you understand the league.
Yeah,
I'm not going to discount so many great candidates because they don't have a history in football or Canadian football. I'm not going to discount them because I'd be shutting out a whole lot of people that could really help this league, and I'm not willing to do that if it's me making the decision. Yourself?
What about a good nickname?
Yourself?
Myself? I don't think it has to be a football guy. And like I said, I mean, my outside the box, but I think it makes sense on so many levels, is Brian Burke. Brian's not a football guy.
That's the best name. Actually, that is so far out of all the names I've heard people bring up, and I don't know if that's possible because he has a job right now, and I don't know if, like you said, we can afford him and or, you know, if he has any interest, but that's the best name I've heard.
Because he might cost the entire salary cap of a team. That's the one issue.
I think
but
he knows the landscape of pro sports in Canada, and he demands the respect of the corporate world and the lunch pail guy because he just has that about him. And I think his business acumen, along with his credibility in a locker room or in a stadium or wherever it may be, I think he has, even in media, he has that too.
And here's another element. Here's a guy who was heavily involved with the LGBTQ community,
sure,
right? Yeah. And there was a guy who was one of the first real advocates in pro sports in North America here in the last 5-6 years to kind of be out and to say, you know, about the whole "you can play" messaging, and his family has long, you know, they've obviously, there's deep roots with his late son. And I just think that he checks the boxes in so many areas that if it's a guy that the Canadian Football League should seriously consider, or at least, if nothing else, have that conversation. Because I think, you know what, from what we can talk about the dollars and all that, but I think the one thing that might be appealing to Brian Burke is to be the guy, to be the commissioner. Like, sometimes a little status and title can go a long way, and especially in the corporate world, everybody kind of likes to be the big cheese. And Brian, I think, I've made the point, and I just think that Brian, so to me, I guess it doesn't have to be a football guy. I'd be intrigued. A guy like Dwayne Ford, to me, I think would be an excellent choice.
I agree.
Because of what he does and his passion and his caring and his knowledge of the game, and to have a guy who's been in the room, that to me, if you're looking for somebody, I would trump Dwayne at this point, unless somebody's, you know, Matt, I really like from a young man standpoint, a guy who's been around the game for a long time, and a guy who can connect with today's athletes, because there's still guys he's played with that are on the field, And guy, so that's a real interesting one. And a guy who, again, checks the boxes in a lot of areas. What about, you know, from a, if they want to go a different level from a female standpoint, Catherine Reich? Maybe yeah. too much too soon still?
Yeah, or? We're talking, you know, the only she has, she fits in the fact that she has a legal background. She's a lawyer, and she's been around football. I just think there's such a short window. She's been around football for 2 years. That's not enough to, that's basically putting any lawyer who's been in football. You could basically take any sports agent in Canada.
What about an agent? They've
been, they're also guys who could be possibilities because they have those attributes of the law degree. They know the game.
Yeah.
Whoever takes the job, if you're a football guy, surround yourself with good business people. If you're a business guy, surround yourself with good football people at the end of the day.
Yeah, that makes logical sense. And what about maybe having a good nickname too, Chess? Like Biscuit or Gizmo. Does that qualify for maybe a good hire?
Or Pinball.
Or C-Ball.
Or Chess.
There you go. You know what? Commissioner Waggle. I think there's a lot of subscribers right now. And if you're not subscribing already, make sure you find us in iTunes right now. It's free. Each new episode goes right to your device, your tablet. Anyway, just a suggestion. We've shared our thoughts. On now to our special guest coming up in just a matter of moments. The former head coach of the Saskatchewan Roughriders is back in the CFL. And you got some DB love for the new assistant head coach of the Toronto Argonauts. And defensive coordinator Corey Chamberlain joins us next. Well, nice to have this guy back in the fold and back in the Canadian Football League. Corey Chamberlain, who is now the assistant head coach of the Toronto Argonauts. Welcome to the Waggle, first off, and hey, welcome back to the Canadian Football League, Corey.
I appreciate it, guys. I'm excited to be both on the Waggle and back in the CFL.
And I like how you prioritize the Waggle before being back in the CFL, too. Chez, he gets bonus points for that one, right?
Corey, yes, 100%, 100%. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it, guys. Davis, it's been a long time.
It has been, and I'm glad to have you back. It's going to be exciting. We've always had that, kind of as old DBs, Corey, we always had that connect to the. You always do the walk around the field. I would often join you on the walks around the field pregame, and we would talk some smack and have a good conversation. So I look forward to that come June, July here this summer.
Without a doubt, I'm ready for it.
Even as a media guy, would you talk smack with a coach, Chess?
Talking smack, yeah, just means talking. I didn't mean smack. We always had good conversations because actually, me and Corey are about the same age. Actually, I'm older than Corey, so I was playing. He was defensive back coach and a defensive coordinator at those times, and I was older than him, and he used to let me know that quite often. And that we're probably going to throw the ball at you because you're older than me.
Without a doubt.
Were you a talker as a player?
No, you know what, I do have this one story. It was in high school. It was this one time I remember talking to this receiver. He's like 6'2", and I told him what I was going to do to him, and he caught a touchdown on me. So from that point on, I was like, yeah, I'm not really a talker. I just try to hit you. So that's my one experience with it. It didn't work out, so no. But, you know, pregame, postgame, messing around with your buddies, sure, but not really during the game.
You are a bit of a talker, Corey. Let's set one thing straight. After bouncing around a couple NFL camps and some NFL teams, you had some thoughts of being a preacher. Is this? Can you confirm this? And that's why your motivational speeches pregame are known to be some of the best.
You know, that's awesome that you actually remember that. Yeah, you know what? After bouncing around for a while, you know, I thought my path was charted towards ministry in the sense of, you know, the formal sense of being in churches. I have a lot of friends that I play with. They're actually pastors, bishops, or what have you. But I ended up getting the best of both worlds because, you know, ministry is about serving others and teaching. And I get to do that with the game that I love, you know. So, and Coach Tressman talks about it. I get to help guys be better, you know, fathers, husbands, you know, and teammates and all those things. So it kind of fits in line, guys, to where, you know, to me it's all about helping guys grow, you know, as a player and as a person. So I still get to do that, you know, and that was the biggest part is I get to teach, I get to be around football, and I get to help men grow.
So after a touchdown, do you like yell testify?
No, I don't get all of that. I definitely don't. You know, my personal beliefs are my beliefs. The only thing when we get the touchdown, and it depends if it's my offense, then I'm excited, and that's the other reason why I chose being a coach is because when the offense actually scores, the opponent offense, oh, it's not godly what I say. So that way I get to be a coach because I can still say those ungodly things instead of being a minister where I have to stay in line.
You see what he did there, Chess? That's a clever coach right there. hey, tell me, how did this all come about? And did you know Mark Trestman before? How did this opportunity present itself?
You know, the only, you know, Mark and I is just, you know, like anything else, being head coaches, been a coordinated league, you know, he's always reached out in the sense of, I think when I got promoted to be a head coach, he's one of the first coaches to reach out to me and congratulate me. The same thing when I won the Grey Cup. But in terms of, you know, just a connection, a daily connection, no. It was one of those things to where, you know, I even asked this when I saw him last week in North Carolina. I said, Coach, how'd you put the staff together? You know, and he went through things that he was looking for. And, you know, I guess I was one of the best available at that time because I think what he was looking for was a defensive backs guy. And it just so happened I had both the skill sets of being a coordinator and being able to coach the defensive backs. So he understands the importance, Davis, of the defensive backs in the CFL. So, you know, I was pretty much the one available with that skill set. So, you know, it happened for me.
Corey, do you look forward, you know, you've been a head coach, a Grey Cup champion head coach. Do you look forward to having the opportunity to be a defensive back coach, being a defensive coordinator, just because, like you said, you have a little bit more time and have an impact on guys' lives in professionally and, of course, off the field as well when you're a position coach and a coordinator?
Yeah. You know, as a head coach, you know, I dabbled a little bit, you know, calling some plays here, you know, getting on the defensive coordinator's nerves. Hey, call this. You know, and because of how many years of coaching experience, I can say it like this. I've been a Grey Cup head coach. I've had all those things. But the thing that I think right now where I am that I needed to get a stronger base in just for professionally is to get more years as a coordinator, because I have more years as a head coach than I do of anything else in that league. And, you know, being 39 years old or whatever, if I want to get a job even outside of the CFL or wherever, it's kind of hard to market yourself as a head coach. You know, that's one of the premier jobs. So, you know, if I'm saying, hey, I want to be a defense coordinator, I only have 1 year of that on my resume, right? Whereas I had three or four years of defensive backs. So I think this just gives me an opportunity to not only help those guys on the field and strengthen their game, but also strengthen my game. And for the most part, I enjoy, for the record, being a head coach, no doubt. But, you know, doing this right here, I look at football, I'm like, man, this is fun. You know, because now it's back to the roots of truly football. There's not a lot of administration that needs to be done like you would do at a head coach. It's just truly football right now, and you know this, to where sitting in the room with those guys, let's talk football all day and grow, and I don't have to worry about a GM or anyone coming in or worried about the media guys doing all the other things that, you know, have to make the team sell.
Just listening to that and realizing that more experience in a head coach than a position coach or a coordinator at this time.
Fast track, total fast track, right, Corey?
That's a serious fast track. Coming in right now, and I want to get into that for a second. In 1936 is when Taylor Field opened. So Eagle Keys, John Gregory, Ken Austin, and Corey Chamberlain. That's four men in the great history of Rider football that have the distinction of bringing the Grey Cup to Regina. It's been a few years now since you've been gone. Have you at least had the chance now to sit back and just take some joy in being such a big part of the rich history of football in Regina?
You know, it's funny you say that, because when we won it just didn't have a feeling to it. I was like, okay, we won it. But then actually, as the time's going on and being removed from the game, and the real thing that's shown me that richness actually is I have about to be a six-year-old and a four-year-old. And the way that they understand, like, Dad, you won a championship. And I'm like, okay, I've won several. But they really opened my eyes to that, hey, you've done something special. And I guess to me it's more so special because it's special to them. And from a professional standpoint, when you look at that, it's like, wow, you know, that's history. You know, that's history right now. You know, and, I know Chris well. But, you know, for the record, I just hope I'm that guy for a long time that I won the last Grey Cup in Saskatchewan, right? You want to be selfish for that.
No,
that, you know, goes down in the history books. But,
no,
you know, it's that was a great ride, man. And to look back on it, that was a great feat. Like I said, to finish up at Mosaic, to close that door, you know, was awesome. And as years go on, I guess I'll probably be remembered a little bit more for that. But it was a positive note.
So what's different about you now as a person and maybe even as a coach, considering, you know, Davis and I were just talking about this a few weeks ago, right before you got hired, and thinking that, you know, for a long time we've suggested, you know, you should be back in this league a lot sooner than you did. And then we kind of look back on one of those closing news conferences where, you know, Corey, it's almost like a classic DB, you know, fearless, you know, not afraid, but it almost comes across as this defiance that people are looking at you almost as this villain. What's different about you from then, of that sort of defiant, like, I'm not afraid of what anybody says or writes, compared to this 39-year-old who's a dad, who's got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and has had a couple years to probably collect his thoughts?
Well, the biggest thing that's changed to me as a person since then is about 15 pounds and 20 gray hairs. That's the only thing as a person. So that's about it. But, you know, it's funny you say that. You know, sometimes you're going to get a good guy role or a bad guy role. And for me, you know, some can come off and, you know, I guess the way I see it, and Davis, you know this, playing defensive back, there's a fine line, and here's what happens in this game. If you're confident, then you're said to be arrogant. If you don't say anything, then, you know, sometimes you're portrayed to be weak. I am an outspoken guy, meaning I believe in those around me, and I believe in myself. And it's not one of those about being brash. It's not bragging. I'm going to have confidence if you ask me. And a lot of times in the media, the questions are asked, you know, and I'm not going to tuck my tail. You know, hey, this is a bad situation. Yeah, it is, but I believe I can make it better, meaning I'm going to always find that positive spot, and I'm going to stand strong on that. It doesn't always end the way I want it to, but I'm not going to let you dictate that. I have to fight and see it myself. So I wouldn't say more so defiant. There's still a lot of fight in me, and I'm going to fight those situations. You know, if anything, you know, and it's not that I have to have the last word or anything like that. The biggest growth that's happened to me over this time is the simple thing of, it doesn't matter who you are and who you try to be. You have to be yourself, because at the end of the day, when that music stops playing, it's done. Meaning you could be the most humble person in the world, you could still get fired. You could be the most arrogant person in the world, you still get fired. You know, or whatever. Whatever it is, you have to be yourself and be comfortable, because that outcome will end. And it's not also ending in, it doesn't have to also end in firing. Sometimes it's attrition. Sometimes you get promoted. I'm the same person I was when I got hired at Calgary, and then when I went from Calgary, I got hired at Saskatchewan. It's all about how you portrayed. And, you know, where I was, there was a different portrayal. Some will like it, some won't. You go all the way back to my high school, college days, my best friends will tell you, after meeting Corey Chamberlain, either you're going to love him or hate him within the first 5 minutes. And then I'm okay. which side of the fence you. And that's not an arrogant standpoint. That's my personality, to where I'm going to be who I am because I have to lay my head down at night and feel good about myself, and that's just the way I have to live.
My late mother, Corey, used to say the same thing about me. She says, to know Davis is to love him, and I always say that about myself. It's true, though. It's funny you said that. It's a hit, because if you know me, you either love me or hate me. It's really quick, so it's funny to hear you say that. One of your players I talked to told me this, and I thought this was great. He said that one of your speeches and how you make the guys feel coming out the room, the confidence you give your football teams, makes you feel like 300 Spartans getting ready to fight 100,000 Greeks. That was a quote from one of your players talking about you and just what you give them coming out of the locker room.
Win all day, every day, in all that you do. That's my basis in how I live. Win all day, every day, in all that you do. Not just on the game and not just in the game. And what I mean by that is you have to win all situations. And it's not the score of 31-30 is a win. You have to have that mindset that whatever's going to come against me, I'm going to give my best. Sometimes that best doesn't end up with a win on the scoreboard, but you're going to remember me. The next time you see me, you're going to remember me. That's how I live. That's that toughness, and that's that fight inside of me, and that tenacity is which I give those guys, is saying, hey, dude, at the end of the day, you have to fight to that last, to the whistle, to the echo of the whistle, as Coach Trestman says, is you have to do it. That's those life lessons, because I believe football teaches life lessons. I believe they're intertwined. So if I see a guy that's not giving his all on the field, then I know he won't give his all in life. So that's where my ministry background comes from, is I believe my purpose on earth is to help men grow. So I get a chance to help them grow, and by finding that strength within inside of them, saying I don't care what the obstacle is, we'll overcome it.
You know, I listen to you, and Chez, you can probably speak to this, having played under Chris Jones. But you also, Corey, you played under Chris Jones at Tennessee Tech, right, as when in college?
Yeah, Chris was one of the coaches there when I was there.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, when we had Chris on the show a few weeks ago, and Chris has kind of been at times painted as the villain this past year in Regina. And, you know, where you're kind of, hey, I don't care, love me, hate me, I'm just going to be who I am and go about it. Chris is kind of the same. What did you learn under Chris?
Chris actually taught me how to be a villain. No, I'm just kidding. But make sure you put that out there.
That makes sense, Corey. That makes a lot of sense now.
you know, the funny thing about it, when you reduce it all the way to the end, this is what you're going to find out about Chris and I. You know, us meeting at Tennessee Tech, you know, he was actually the one that helped me get in the CFL as a coach. You know, he's actually one of the first coaches to tell me that I can go to the NFL. What you're going to reduce this all the way to is this. We're both blue collar. We're both going to work, and that's what it is. And so when to meet him is like, okay, this is how it is. You know, coming up as a young coach, seeing that work ethic that, you know, I had, but transferred from a player to a coach was that. You know, and the other thing is, you know, Chris being a descendant of what's his name? You know him. You played for him, Don Matthews. Yeah. You know, so you there's different things that I learned scheme wise and different things on how to attack people that you learn from Chris, but. Just, you know, Chris and I have a similar personality, and I tell people this. I say, Chris and I have a very similar personality. He's just on one end of the spectrum. I'm on the other end. But we see life through the same lenses when it comes to football, that, hey, this is a part of life, meaning not just the game, but teaching those guys those life lessons that, hey, sometimes it's going to be tough and you got to make it. So, you know, there's so many lessons that I've learned on a lot of people, but with Chris is just continue to have that blue-collar work ethic and success will come. And I took it to the CFL, and like I said, I've been fast-tracked because of that blue-collar work ethic.
So do you have a Chris Jones impression? Like, Davis has shared his a little bit. Chez, you wanna, maybe we could try to have a one-off here or something like that. Here, Chez, you go first. Hold on, Chez.
I'm going to give you one that you've heard a million times from talking to his defensive backs. Get up on him. Get up on him. Get up on him. How's that?
Hey, you do a great one. Now, I don't have a Chris Jones impression because I think this is probably a family show. So the Chris Jones impression I have, I can't say. So, no, Chris is good, man. He said it all. That's how he is. I will tell you this one story about Chris. This is a good one, though. I remember I was in the box, and we were playing Saskatchewan, and we had created this new defense. And I was like, Jones, you might need to get out of this defense. And actually I have two, and Chris is like, I'm going to run this defense till the cows come home. And they ended up having like 500 yards on us. I remember that night perfectly. And after the game, or the day later, he's like, I guess the cows came home. I said, yeah, they did, huh, Chris? I was like, I guess they did. So Chris can be stubborn a little bit. And that's the one thing I've learned is, and I know, I'm sure he's matured out of that over time, but, you know, I've learned also that, you know, you can't be too stubborn, that it affects the whole game.
That was good. I guess the cows did come home.
Oh, he's like, I guess the cows did come. Because Chris knows that I'm going to say the truth the next day. And I can remember he said it before I got it out. I was like, you better be glad you said it, because I was going to let you know that they came home. But, you know, we had fun. You know, it was good working with those guys. That was awesome.
So moving into this year, 2017, training camp is just around the corner. Your thoughts? You have a group of guys that you will only have for mini camp, and then for, you know, a short period of a few weeks in training camp. Mostly guys that you've never coached before and you don't know. What challenges are you presented with now with this situation?
You know what? Here's what I've been doing the last couple of days, pulling my hair out, because between all those places I've been, even the playbooks and Saskatchewan, I looked at it and I was like, what am I doing? I had to go back to when we first came to Saskatchewan, 12, 13-ish, and when we went to Calgary in 8, I was like, this is a new group. They won't know all these intricacies. I don't care how much they've played in the CFL. I still have to start from the foundation with these guys. That doesn't mean that we have a simple defense, but I have to start the foundation. So what I've been doing is going through, combing through the playbook and saying, okay, what do we want to start as and who do we want to be? Because some of these guys, I don't know how they move, what they can play. Are we man corners, zone corners? Can we drop the ends? Can we not drop the ends? Can we blitz the safeties? So I have to be, you know, basically prepared to have a playbook to where I can evaluate talent and one at the same time make sure we're fast enough that when we come out that those first three or four games, that we have enough ammo that we can win some games defensively doing the things that we need to do. So the biggest challenge is for me is to make sure that I understand that this is a process. That it's, I don't care if they play 4 or 5 years in the league, this is a process. I have to start from ground zero, and the quicker they move, the quicker we can move this defense.
A unique situation that you're coming into here, because now you have, you know, it's your own new head coach, new coordinator, and a new general manager. So it's none of, you know, per se, your guys, per se. What do you think is easier, Corey, as you look at a roster, and especially, you know, on the defensive side of the ball for yourself? Is it easier, you think, to change your scheme a little bit as you move on, looking at the pieces you have? Or is it easier to adjust some of the pieces to the scheme that you're going to bring in? What do you think is easier transition as you move into June here?
I think right now, going back to what I said with that growth of me finally saying, okay, you know, in 2011 I was a defensive coordinator. That was one defense. Now this is my chance to be a defensive coordinator again. Not like I haven't been doing it over the years, but this is my chance. So now it's good to build it from the ground up. You know, there's a lot less things that I have to break. Also, there's a level of freshness that'll come out of this, Davis, just because everything's new. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. And the other thing is, they made those changes when I was in the 2015, when the illegal contacts and all that stuff. Well, that took away that aggressive mug and run type defense that we played when you guys were there. So that actually helped me change a little bit of my scheme a little bit, saying, okay, well, we can't be bump and run the whole night. You know, that's gone. You know, so, okay, so now that causes me not just to say, let's go get all the fast guys and get guys that I know to play the system to, okay, advance as a coordinator, advance as a defensive coach, and learn some schemes that normally you wouldn't do, but now you have to do. So, you know, I'm excited about it, but like I said, for the most part, it depends on where you are and what you're doing and where you're going. But for me, you know, the guys that have been doing it 10, 15 years, they're not going to start from the ground up, right? They're going to look to bring in the guys that they played and had around them and, you know, to get this thing running here or there. But I think we'll put something out there that where guys can play fast, and then we'll do some things early to excite people.
Look forward to watching your rule changes. Actually, I'd like to get your opinion on that as we go into the new rule changes. I look at it now, and I say for myself, and there's a lot of other DBs who you've coached to who play catch technique, and you know, you can squat on routes, you can sit at 10 yards and redirect double moves, things like that. It almost has taken out off coverage with the new rules. It's almost taken out off coverage, the lack of contact after 5 yards. Does this change the technique that you would coach as a primarily a secondary guy most of your career? Does that change the technique of your DBs and how you want them to play?
Oh, without a doubt. It's funny because I was, you know, installing this defense, we're still taking things from, you know, things we did in Saskatchewan. I watched the 2013 Grey Cup, and I was like, man, we look pretty good. But if those same rules were in place...
You can't do that.
If those same rules were in place, we would be in trouble. So, you know, it's funny, and that's what I'm saying. Because of those rules, you can sit and you can try to fight them, or you can adapt. So I think, like I said, this time with me coming back, there's a lot of adapting that I'm really... you know, like, okay, this is good. Like I said, it's going to cause you to play more zone and to do different things within zone instead of saying, hey, we could just play man and, you know, and no, we got to play some zones. We have to teach even the techniques in zone, you know, jamming at 10, 12 like we used to. You can't do all those things. So I think it makes you a better teacher with the rules, a better defensive coach. You have to be a great teacher for these guys to still be able to play effective and hold those points down.
You sound like you're legitimately excited. You sound like you could just hear the fun in your voice. You sound like you're jacked up, ready to go.
I am super excited. You know, sitting in with, you know, the new staff that I've been dealing with, and I told these guys, I said, you know, everything is, you know, the alignment's perfect right now, and we know we had to go through some things. Those guys get me, and that's kind of hard to do sometimes because I can get very brainy with 100 different checks. But, you know, those guys, they get it, and they're like, man, you're really excited about this. Because I'm like, yeah, because, you know, I look around the league, and there's some guys that's doing some of the things that we've done when we were there the first time. But now I'm looking like, okay, hey, here's a chance to do some new things, you know, and let's see how these things work and to create some things and actually sit in the whole defensive room for a whole meeting instead of having to go out and see what the offense is doing, the special teams doing. So it's like my brain is not split. I'm not split in 100 different places. I'm in one place, and it's around defense. So, you know, it's fun to have that focus and know what you're doing.
Well, you must love the challenge to have to go up against, what, three teams in the division that all look at themselves as legitimate Grey Cup contenders. I mean, you got Darien, your old quarterback, who's in Montreal now, and they've just loaded up. Ottawa's the reigning Grey Cup champions, and then Hamilton with Zach Collaros and company. I think they've retooled defensively to make a little run themselves. It's you're not easing your way back into this here, Corey.
No, I guess I better go to the motivation store to make those guys feel bigger than what they are, and read up on some new motivation techniques, and say, hey, you know, and go through Troy and everything else, all the different Greek movies, because right now it's going to be a tough challenge. And I guess, as you say, that's the one thing. Also looking at it, it's not like I'm. Here's the other thing: I'm not going to the first place defense from last year. This is a different challenge to where it was tough for him last year. I understand quarterback or whatever the deal was, but points, I think they gave up the most in the league. So, and I know that's a tough situation. I've been there to where as a head coach, you kind of split trying to help it. But right now I look at this as like, okay, here it is. Let's go up. Here's a chance for me to rebuild something from the bottom up. And I think I like that, you know, and I really want to do that. It's kind of what we did in Saskatchewan when, I think they were whatever 2-3-7 or whatever the second year we ended up winning the Grey Cup. So it's a challenge for me to build something again. You know, the other thing is to be able to build it with, you know, Ricky Ray, Mark Trestman, Marcus Brady, with all those guys, Kevin Iben, to build it around with those guys on offense and special teams, that helps a lot.
Corey, like James said, I can hear the excitement in your voice as well. It's genuine, and it is great to have you back, honestly. Welcome back to the Canadian Football League, and good luck. We'll see you in June, and good luck with everything, Corey. Thanks a lot for joining us and sharing today. This was fun.
Okay, hey, guys, I appreciate it, and I'm always available. Enjoy.
Corey Chamberlain, the newest member of the Toronto Argonauts, joining us this week on the Waggle. And boy, I think that guy sounds like he wishes the season started next week.
You can sense when someone's genuinely excited about a new opportunity, and he's been out of the game that he loves and that he's you know spent his whole life being a part of, and it shows that he's genuinely excited for the opportunity to come back and be a part of building in Toronto. And that's the key, I think, James, is he, you know, the whole Argonauts staff along with the fan base there, this is a bit of a rebuild. I think they all have to realize that. And
is it that much of one, though?
I think it is a rebuild. I think that, I mean, he's got his cupboards aren't full. His cupboards, they're not bare, but they're not full. I think he has to understand that. I think he does understand that. And I think that goes for Coach Trestman and Jim Popp as well. This is going to be a process. So I think they'll be patient. And I think these guys are willing to embrace the process as they move forward. They're only going to get better as the year goes on.
You know, there's resources that they have that he alluded to. And look, I think if we're going to do a quick power rankings or a quick scan of what the East Division looks like, I think the Argos are behind the eight ball here. They look, on paper at least, to be the weakest of the four teams in the East behind Ottawa, Montreal, and Hamilton, however you want to rank them. We can get into that, you know, in the next couple of weeks or two because we've got some time to do that. But from a coaching standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, Trestman as your coach, and you've talked about this multiple times, your head coach, the captain of the food chain, might arguably have the best coach in the Canadian Football League of the last quarter century, or at least one of the greatest minds to have at least come by. And we got some good coaches right now in the Canadian Football League. Mark Trestman, you got a guy who's a former Coach of the Year not that long ago, a guy who's a Grey Cup champion, one of the only coaches who have ever hoisted the Grey Cup. Now you got Corey Chamberlain, who's with the Argos staff as well. Jim Popp has been an architect of many a Grey Cup team. Say what you want about him, but Jim's a winner and a proven one and a future Hall of Famer in the Canadian Football League, no matter how you shape it. But you got those three guys. And then your quarterback, Ricky Ray. Yeah, health can be an issue, but you got a healthy Ricky Ray, you got a fighting chance. So you talk about some of the greatest minds presently that have come across the CFL over the last 5-10 years. You know, that's a lot of great minds gathering right now that are going to give you a fighting chance to get out there on the field to at least come up with a game plan. You may not win them all, but you're at least going to be able to compete and have a chance to match wits and maybe even outfox a few of those teams that might be more talented on paper.
I expect the Argos to get better as the season goes on, and that's a testament to what you're saying. This is a good group of guys. Mm-hmm. It's going to take some time. This team will get better as the season goes on, and that's all we can expect at this point in time.
You got a question, you got a comment for us, you can always reach us via email. You can hit us up at thewaggle@cfl.ca. You got a question, comment, a like, a dislike, whatever it may be, You can email us directly. thewaggle@cfl.ca is where you can hit us up, and we'll try to respond and reply to some of those questions and comments on a future episode coming up in the next few weeks. Also, if you haven't subscribed already, do so. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us each and every week with a fresh new episode, and it goes right to whatever device or smartphone or tablet you're using, and it goes right there, and it's free. And you know what? If you've got the time, hey, give us a review. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, what, you know, more Chez, remove Cebulski, whatever it may be. We are a democratic society, people. We welcome opinion. We welcome your perspective, and it certainly helps us along the way as well. So if you haven't already, do so. Subscribe in iTunes. And if you're just discovering us now here on CFL.ca, there's a lot of great, fresh, well, I guess they're not as fresh, but there's a lot of great stories and interviews and conversations that we've had over the last year on the Waggle that you can find in the archives department in iTunes as well. And again, they're all free, Chez.
Yeah, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
We will talk to you again next week. That's Davis Sanchez. I'm James Cebulski. Talk to you again soon. See ya.